Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I talk to the spirit?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Welcome, everybody, to a brand new episode here of the
Geek
Buddies!
Hey! We are back at it with our Friday episode here. Thanks to everybody who watched a few days ago. We talked about the Oscars. If you haven't watched our breakdown of the Oscars, it is up on the channel now. But we are back with our main show today. And our show is going to be a little bit different today. We're going to talk about a lot of topics, but we're essentially going to split the show up into two sections. We're going to lead with all the Star Wars news in one section, take a break, and then we're going to go into all the Marvel stuff in the second section. So we hope you hang out with us and enjoy our conversations as we jump into all of that here on the Geek Buddies. But let's introduce ourselves for any of you who may be first time watchers of the show. I'm the Outlaw John Rocha, writer, producer, and host here on the Geek Buddies.
I am Michael Vogel, writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies, and currently still recovering from going to the GLAAD Awards last night.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm a television actor and an animation writer, where you can see some of our current work right now on the GLAAD Award nominated Strawberry Shortcake, Barry in the Big City. Season 3 is on YouTube every weekend, and seasons 1 and 2 are on Netflix.
Yeah, we should talk about it because certainly our fans, when you announced this last week, Michael, were very congratulatory to you and to Shannon and to everybody involved in the Strawberry Shortcake team. So tell us, last night was the event. You wore a fantastic white suit. You looked great. What was the experience like? Did you all win? And what can you say about the GLAAD Awards?
We did not win, but we did hang out with a lot of fun people. Our table was right next to the Transformers table from Nickelodeon, and they were nominated as well. So hanging out, the Strawberry Shortcake team and the Transformers team all hanging out together at the GLAAD Awards, and it was a really fun event. Awesome to see so many people coming together to support the community. Oprah Winfrey was honored, and just being in the same room with Oprah is pretty cool. And just had a really, really nice time. So it was fun. There was a 2-hour cocktail party followed by the 3-hour award show followed by the 2-hour after party. So that's a lot of hours of drinking and martinis. even though we did not win, nor did the Transformers team, we all decided it was really cool that Transformers and Strawberry Shortcake got to hang with the cast of Yellow Jackets and the cast of Ted Lasso and the cast of Drag Race and have a really fun gay old time.
Wow. Is there a Transformers Strawberry Shortcake crossover being talked about in any way, shape, or form? Or no, is that not a possibility?
How would that work? Optimus
Perry?
Optimus Prime.
There it is. See, that's why, by the way, that's why we keep Shannon around.
Yeah. Nice stuff.
Anyway,
so, well, congratulations to you both for being a part of a GLAAD nominated show. And of course, I'm sorry that you guys lost, but it sounds like it was a great time there, Michael. So great to hear from you all. And it's fantastic. You guys want to check out Strawberry Shortcake? As Shannon said, it's all available there on Netflix. Have fun. They're 4-minute episodes. You can tear through a season in like 2 hours or something like that. So come on, get on it.
Which Johnny has done.
Yes, many, many times. It's a great show. A lot of voiceover work. I mean, somehow I didn't get called in to voice anything. But yeah, it's great voiceover work all over that show. Fantastic stuff. Definitely you guys should check it out. Great.
We're going to bring you back for the crossover, and you can voice Egatron.
He's warming up, folks. He's warming up, folks. This is not the last one of these that we're going to get in this hour-long episode.
I just had a double egg bagel. I love it. That's perfect. anyway, let's get into things here. And the first place we're going to go, of course, is Patty Jenkins. And that's the big conversation that's been going on here over the last few days. Patty Jenkins, supposedly, last we checked, when last we saw Patty Jenkins in Star Wars, they had reportedly parted ways because of she wanted to work on the now defunct Wonder Woman 3. But recently on a podcast this week with Ben Bankowitz over there on the Talking Pictures podcast, which is on the TCM/Max podcast network, she mentioned that she is back on to doing Rogue Squadron in some fashion. She said, so when I left Star Wars to do Wonder Woman 3, I thought maybe I'll come back to Star Wars after Wonder Woman 3. So we did a deal for that to happen, started a deal, but I thought I was doing Wonder Woman. When that went away, Lucasfilm and I were like, oh, we got to finish this deal. We finished the deal right as the strike was happening. So I now owe a draft of Star Wars. And so we will see what happens there. You know, like, who knows? It's hard. They have a hard job in front of them of what's the first movie they're going to do. It's been announced, Mandalorian, Grogu, catch up there, Jenkins. They have other directors who have been working, but I am now, you know, I'm back on doing Rogue Squadron, and we'll see what happens. We need to develop, you know, get it to where we are both super happy with it. So, Michael, this is a lot of talk for someone that was not officially announced by Lucasfilm as coming back to the project. Your overall thoughts on these comments here from Patty Jenkins to Ben Mankiewicz?
I mean, the fact that she owes them a script is pretty far down on the green light totem pole.
Yeah, tell us, as Mike, for those you may know, Michael is an executive, has been a showrunner. He's been in the halls of power in this thing. So, yes, please explain this, Michael.
Well, so like if they made a deal, you know, that they were going to develop a script with Patty Jenkins for Rogue Squadron, and they seemed pretty excited about it when they filmed her in front of an airplane, you know, feels like 35 years ago. and I'm sure that they're like, well, we made this deal. She might as well write the script. Maybe it'll be great. Like, who knows? Right. But it does start to feel a little bit like, I mean, let her write that script. Let's see what's going on. If it's a great script and she wants to make a great Star Wars movie, all power to her. It does seem to feel like Lucasfilm, even though they came out with they came out with this big announcement. They're like, we're doing the Rey Skywalker movie. We're doing the Origin of the Jedi movie. Yeah. Filoni's going to wrap everything up. That's what we're doing. And it was like, okay, that is still some problems with that plan, potentially, but that's a plan. And then they're like, P.S., we're also doing Mandalorian and Grogu. Okay, so that's four, and the Mandalorian and Grogu is tied to the Filoni one, maybe, but okay, cool. And then Patty Jenkins rolls up and said, by the way, I'm still writing this Rogue Squadron. And you're just like, oh, Star Wars, like, Lucasfilm, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? And like, to be clear, to be fair to Lucasfilm, like, they didn't announce this. They didn't come out and say, by the way, Rogue Squadron's back on. It's Patty Jenkins trying to make some news for Patty Jenkins. But it does sort of lead to a bigger concern. I mean, as we're talking about Star Wars for this first chunk of the hour, you know, I'm hearing rumors. And I mean, again, rumors only. But like, I'm hearing rumors that the Rey movie is not in great shape.
Yeah.
And that they don't really know. Shannon and I were talking about this the other day, particularly in the shadow of Dune 2 coming out and just being such a massive hit, both with audiences, with critics, like box office. And one of the reasons I think it works so well is like the movie has a very clear point of view. It's saying some very specific things. And I think when George Lucas made the original trilogy, he wanted to talk about some specific things. And even when George Lucas made the prequels, as problematic as some of us feel some of the prequels are from a production standpoint, from a script standpoint, he was telling a very specific story. Star Wars feels like it's lost a little bit of what its story is. It feels like they love to fill in the gaps.
Right.
That's a safe space. It's like, okay, well, we know that Palpatine returned because we said that. So let's spend a lot of time talking about cloning between these movies. But it doesn't feel like they really know where they're going. And so Patty Jenkins writing a script and throwing that news out there onto the pile feels like one more notch in the what the fuck are you doing Lucasfilm belt.
Shannon, you look at this. She's talking out loud about her situation there, Rogue Squadron. She's taking ownership of the script. She's kind of saying like, hey, we got to get this done. I'm in with Disney and Lucasfilm because we got to get this done. But Matthew Robinson is the credited writer on the script. So she's doing a pass and she was supposed to be the director on this thing. Is this her going into business for herself? A little bit of overbranding, or maybe trying to get herself back into people's minds or people into people's mouths, because she hasn't done anything and she's taken some hits now from 1984 to Wonder Woman 3 being scrapped to her being kicked off Rogue Squadron. Like, why would you do something like this? You could have easily submitted the pass and not done some and not said a word about it, collected your paycheck and rolled on. Is this her trying to get herself back into the mouths of people in Hollywood?
I mean, it's a very common thing, I imagine, in all industries, but since we work in the entertainment industry, yeah, that's one I'm referencing, companies want to hire people who are working, because if you are currently employed, that gives companies like, oh, they're doing something right because you are employed in this highly competitive industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing when they put that video out, there was an expectation given to the fans that this project was maybe a little further along than it actually was. Mm-hmm. And then when she left, I mean, I think that's the thing. Even like DC has done this. You announce a movie, you don't necessarily say, oh, by the way, that movie's dead. Like, you don't always make an announcement. Like when DC unleashed that first torrent of like, we're gonna do the Green Lantern Corps, and then the Cyborg movie is coming. And granted, they didn't announce any creatives that were attached to it. They just say, hey, this is coming out on this date. Right. They never came back and like, oh, by the way, that's dead. So the fact that Patty Jenkins, like, this was announced, it was not as far along down the road as it seemed like it probably was. For her to come back and finish a script, I think Vogel's right. Like, you know, we had a deal for you to do this. Go ahead and do it. And I feel like if the project were in really good shape, Disney doesn't necessarily want you talking about it. They want to own that narrative. They want to take control of like, hey, this is who is involved. This is when it's coming out. So I do think what you mentioned, John, probably does have some credibility. Like the idea that she's like, oh, by the way, yeah, I am doing this now. Like she's the one who was kind of talking about it. I mean, like, you want to bang the drum for your own career.
So wait, hold on. I'm just trying to make sure I want to get my, Star Wars graveyard correct. So Benioff and Weiss,
yes,
came and went.
Yes,
Ryan Johnson came and went.
It's still supposedly still happening.
Taika Waititi is apparently every night before he goes to bed writing two or three lines in his Star Wars script that he's going to turn in one day.
In between pictures with Rita Ora, yes.
Patty Jenkins. Damon Lindelof came and went. Damon Lindelof came in and then went and left and was like, guys, this was rough.
Right.
Is there anyone else that I'm missing aside from the people that are attached to the actual movies that we know are happening?
Kevin Feige, the Star Wars movie that he was going to produce. And is Sean Levy, is he the Rey movie or is that a different? Is that another one?
He is. He's writing a Rey movie.
Okay.
A Rey movie or the Rey movie?
No, not the Rey movie. A Rey. From what I know, from what I understand, he is writing a Rey movie, and Stephen Knight is writing a separate Rey movie that Charmaine Obey Chinoy is directing.
The Rey movie.
The Rey movie.
A Rey movie?
By the way, Horowitz, Josh Horowitz on his Happy, Sad, Confused podcast, he kind of asked Daisy about these rumors about a Rey movie that was being done where she is old and that Helen Mirren was going to play Rey as an older Rey. And this Daisy said it was the first she'd heard of it, but that is the rumored Sean Levy approach, is that this is an older Rey looking back on her life. And so the story is being told through flashback and going back to Helen Mirren playing Rey back and forth. So there's a lot of rumors about it going on. And Michael, like you, I've also heard from a couple of pretty tapped in sources who say that it's a bit of a mess, the Rey movie. So And it would suck, man. If that thing goes down, all the anti-woke people are going to fucking lose their mind. Yeah. Like, we were right. We were right. So you see, and it just is going to waste a lot of fucking toxic or spill a lot of toxic energy back into the Star Wars fandom, which would suck. I mean, yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
And to be clear, I mean, of all of the Star Wars projects, I'm rooting for the Rey movie the most.
Sure.
Because it's the thing that gets Star Wars out of where Star Wars is now.
Like, yeah.
I love Ahsoka as a character. The Ahsoka series, little hit and miss for me. But like in general, Star Wars is like a storytelling traffic jam right now.
Right.
Like they are like, hey, we have this, we have some space between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. We filled most of that space, but we still have a couple more stories to tell. We've got these 30 years between Jedi and Force Awakens, so we can do a bunch of stuff there because those movies exist and we know we have to link up to that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's all just filling in gaps. It's all just sort of running around. We get to like, you know, we get to a, like, we're going to talk about Bad Batch, but like a lot of Bad Batch season 3 is a lot of Ahsoka season 1, which is, hey guys, let's spend a lot of time getting off this planet. Now we got to get back to this planet. No, we got to get to this planet. Okay, now we're stuck. We got to get off the planet. It's just like there's a lot of moving pieces, but it doesn't feel like the story's moving. And Rey is the one thing that is set after everything. It's after Rise of Skywalker. It's after all of that. It's whatever it does can define what's next for Star Wars. And I think that's why it's in kind of a mess, because I don't think anyone at Lucasfilm is confident enough to put a stake in the ground and say, this is what Star Wars is going to be moving forward.
I think that's a great point. It's supposed to set the table, right, Shannon, to kind of let us go from there to move forward, what we're going to do. This is what the new trilogy or the new universe is going to be now. And it seems, I sense the same thing that Michael says, is that, what do you think, that no one's willing to make a strong decision and go, no, this is what we're doing. Fuck everything else. This is the way we're going. If they hate it, they hate it, but this is the way we're going. And it seems like they're doing what JJ did in Rise of Skywalker. Let's try to satisfy everybody so that nobody hates us. And that's never going to work.
Yeah. I mean, and again, this is another Hollywood thing. No one wants to be the one to say yes, because if you are the first one who says yes, if you're the first domino, if it goes south, then you are the one that a lot of the blame is going to get hung up on. Now, once someone has said yes, everyone can chime in and be like, yep, it was great. It was great. It was great. If it's a success, then you can be like, hey, I was part of that chorus that said this was, I was one of the ones that said Home Alone was going to be a hit. And if it's no, then like, well, I wasn't the first, I didn't approve this. Yep.
Yeah. I didn't touch
like,
it.
I was trying to be a good team player. I had my reservations, but I was getting on Team Star Wars. This is what I wanted to do. So until someone does make that decision, and ultimately it's going to be Kathleen Kennedy who says yeah or nay. And you know, her you know, first at bat being the solo producer with the sequel trilogy didn't turn out well. I mean, you know, and it was, even though they made a lot of money, it kind of hobbled the brand a little bit, especially by the end. So I think she's probably reticent to say, yep, this is the direction we're going.
Yeah.
Well, and look, and to be fair, because, and Shannon and I talked about this recently when we were at Disneyland, like the new trilogy, we already have planned a Geek Buddies day. I thought I was safe to bring it up. We have planned a day when the three of us are going.
I don't know who said that. I'm sorry.
you texted us lots of pictures of the Disney ticket webpage and said, am I doing this right? Like, you know, we did the whole thing.
There's no need to bring up my copy. Go ahead. Yes.
No, but like, look, when we were at Galaxy's Edge, like I love the fact there is a generation of kids that they're growing up on Force Awakens, Last Jedi, and Rise of Skywalker. And they will like it, even Rise of Skywalker, more than we do. And that is great, and I'm glad that like Rey and Poe and Finn and Kylo Ren and BB-8 and all of them are a part of the Star Wars universe. But just to be fair, like J.J. Abrams, he basically got to do the do-over. Like Force Awakens, and like as much as like a lot of us really enjoy watching Force Awakens, it is a do-over. Like the Resistance is the Rebellion, the First Order is the Empire. Like everything is sort of it. Starkiller Base is a bigger Death Star. Like they just did A New Hope over again, and they don't. And we all accepted it at the time because we were so excited for Star Wars to be back. They can't do that again.
Yeah, no.
They can't go. Now we have Galaxy Killer Station and have a giant galaxy that uses kyber crystals to knock over other galaxies. You can't just keep doing that. So they are at a crossroads where it's like, okay, so what's next?
Yeah, that's what I feel like, and we'll move on to the next subject because we already spent 20 minutes on this particular topic, but this particular story. I feel, and I compared this the other day when I was on the hot mic talking about it with Jeff, it feels to me like in The Godfather, when Sollozzo shoots the Godfather 6 times, he tells Tom Hagen, the Godfather is slipping. Would I have been able to get to him and shoot him 6 times 10 years ago? And I think that's what's happening here with Star Wars, with Marvel, all under the Disney banner. Like, people sense a weakness. Do you think Patty Jenkins would have gone into business for herself if Star Wars and Disney was hardcore like it used to be in the old days where you don't fuck with the mouse? Like, I don't think she would have said a word without their approval. But because there's blood in the water, they sense there's a bit of weakness. They can maybe push Iger. She even says in the we'll get to that later, but like the Iger situation, a lot of people think because things are in flux that they can push Iger in one direction or another. And that's what it seems like Patty was maybe trying to do, especially because she used the terms like ownership. We are going to get it to a good place where we are happy with it. And it's like, I'm sure they're just like, just give us the thing so we can give you the check and move on, for God's sakes. I don't imagine they want Patty going out there going like, oh yes, it's very much what I want to put forward. And we are going to have to agree before Rogue Squadron comes out. Cause I guarantee it's going to go through like 20 more writers before it sees the light of day, if it ever sees the light of day. So, well, let's move on to Gina Carano. Speaking of some situations here, she is Star Wars situation. She gave a lengthy interview to Hollywood Reporter talking about her reaction to being let go in Star Wars. And these are some of the quotes. I'll just read them real quick. I just laid down and cried and cried. I curled into a fetal position. It's not that I didn't think that something like that could happen. It was that I couldn't imagine they would put out this horrendous statement about me after working with me, the most powerful and entertainment company in the world, saying that about me. And then she went on further to talk about how Elon Musk is footing her bill. She claims to have never met him and says that he is fighting, quote, massive injustice battles. Never mind that he just fired Don Lemon for asking him questions that hurt his feelings. She also spoke about the consequences of her firing and says you become unhirable and then it becomes okay for other people to disrespect you. And then you're just carrying around this disrespect and you're shouldering all this shame and it affects your physicality, your mentality, you're just kind of hopeless. So to be able to fight back, it makes me feel like, okay, that feels good. And then going on to say that she's not a perfect person, that you'll find a person who is doing her absolute best under one of the most aggressive, unnecessary cancellations in Hollywood history. And she says, I'm thinking about finally being healthier and having this monkey off my back and telling my story and getting on with my own life. Shannon, just like Patty Jenkins doing a little PR work for herself, this was, I mean, for me personally, an interview that had me guffawing through most of it because it is so transparently a puff piece to try to get her working again in Hollywood that it's almost comical how ignorant she seems to be about some of the stuff when it's convenient and how very aware of some of the stuff she is when it's convenient. What are your thoughts on the comments here? What are your thoughts on this interview and what the reason might be behind it?
I mean, anytime someone loses a job like this as a performer who, you struggle to get hired sometimes, like reading the reaction that she had, I'm like, man, that sucks. Like that I feel bad for you.
The That's crying, really sad. You mean the fetal position, that stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there have been jobs that I've been on hold for that didn't come through. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, damn, can I just catch a break here? Mm-hmm. And reading her response to that, I'm like, yeah, I imagine that was heartbreaking. But this is all a monster of your own making.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, when she talks about Favreau bringing her in and she was sort of presuming that she was going to be a Wookiee because up until that point, her Hollywood career outside of Haywire, which her voice was altered for because she's not a good actress. Yeah. Up until then, she'd been kind of a silent henchman. Like she would have a line here, a line there. You know, she was in Deadpool. She didn't have a ton of dialogue. This opportunity being presented to her where, oh, I'm one of the people who doesn't I'm not a CGI creation. I'm not the voice of a robot or a creature or an alien. I get to be me. I get to be a version of me. And what an incredible opportunity that is. And not taking care of it. It seemed like Disney did try to work with her, and based off of her interview, it didn't sound like they drew a line in the sand and said, hey, if you do this again, that is it. Yeah. But if you are repeatedly, if your boss is repeatedly having you meet with counselors talk about things, it's like, hey, the things that you're doing, maybe don't.
Yeah.
Or if you are so steadfast in your beliefs that you're okay with losing that opportunity, go on. But then you don't get to cry foul. You don't get to say, oh, this big company's pushing me around. It's like, no, like, I don't know what contract she had signed, but the whole idea of, well, they fired Gina Carano. If she had not signed a contract for Rangers of the New Republic, they didn't fire her.
Yeah.
Like there was, she completed her employment obligations to the second season of The Mandalorian. Yeah. If that contract had not been extended, the whole idea of like, you know, I'm suing you for wrongful termination is like, you weren't terminated. You just weren't renewed. And there is a difference there. I like, they didn't break again. And maybe she did sign a contract. Maybe I'm talking out of my ass right now, but the way that it sounds, she didn't, there was no contract to continue her employment. So Disney fulfilled their obligations. She fulfilled her obligations. Disney as a company decided, we don't want to be in business with you anymore. And as a company that practices, that is their right.
Yeah.
So again, part of me feels sympathy for her. The other part is like, this was, you know, you are a marginally talented performer who got into this because of your professional sports career. Like that is why this happened. And if you don't have the goods to keep going, like if she were a tremendous performer, she would be doing more. Like someone at this point would have signed her up for something, not including Ben Shapiro's company. But if she were a tremendous performer, someone would have signed her up. Kevin Spacey is slowly making a comeback.
Yeah.
And you know that, and that is what happens. And there's a reason that it's not happening with her. It's because she's not that good.
Yeah, I mean, Gibson has come back and been Oscar nominated after those voicemails, Mel Gibson. And we've seen that come. I mean, as you said, with Spacey, there's other people who are coming back into being accepted back again and doing work and slowly but surely move themselves away. Michael, this seemed very much like poor me, poor me, poor me. Don't blame me. And I was just trying to do this. And I was just trying to say this. And oh, I didn't know it would mean this. I mean, does someone who is in MMA to claim that they don't understand how a fandom can turn on them? In every sports fucking situation, there are fans who criticize you, ridicule you, laugh at you, go online and do so. So for her to claim like innocence about this, I didn't understand. Even after having spoken with Star Wars actors, it really rings hollow to me. And yeah, at the end of the day, it just feels like this is someone who pissed away a golden opportunity and still does not want to take responsibility for it and still insinuating in all the comments that it's everyone else who misunderstood her, misinterpreted her, and it was unfair. And having Ben Shapiro supporting you and trying to claim like Pedro Pascal's posts were worse is not a good cheerleader to have on your side of these things. What are your thoughts on the interview and how it all came off?
I mean, I think they should hire her back.
Really?
<I'm just> kidding.
I love it. Yes.
No, I mean, first of all, yeah, like this is, we often as actors and celebrities and directors and people of note do something that puts them on the outs. You kind of watch this happen, like the slow comeback.
Yeah.
This definitely was like this is what this is. This is PR.
Yeah.
Going into overdrive. This is like you got a new PR team and they went to the Hollywood Reporter and they's like it is very clearly Gina's trying to come back. But there's a couple things that just really don't add up about it that make it challenging for her to do what she's trying to do. One, Shannon's right. She's suing Disney for wrongful termination, but I think Shannon is correct because the way that Disney and Lucasfilm phrased it when everything happened was Gina Carano is not currently employed by us.
Right.
That being said, we don't like what she's saying. And I think Shannon's right. There was clearly talk of her leading a show. But it doesn't seem like that deal happened and went away. Maybe it did. Maybe when all of the lawsuit comes out, we're going to be like, nope, she signed these papers and then they took it back. But it kind of feels like Disney took the opportunity to be like, we have now fulfilled this part of the obligation and now we don't want to work with her anymore. Yeah. And I think the thing that people need to realize is sitting outside of these walls and looking in and having really just social media and Twitter and interviews to kind of go by, you don't actually get fired for a single tweet. You don't actually get fired for you said this one thing and they're right. Like, oh, you used the wrong word, you're canceled. Because to her point, there are other people that tweet things or say things in interviews or speak out of turn. And if those people are generally well-liked and people love working with them and they're really talented or they're really, you know, or behind the scenes, you're like, you're actually a great person, then people stick up for them. I'm going to use Chris Pratt as an example. Chris Pratt says shit all the time that makes everybody go crazy. He says something online, he posts something, everybody goes batshit crazy. That Guardians of the Galaxy cast has Chris Pratt's back.
Yeah.
They always defend him. He must be a good guy. James Gunn, who did get fired when all those old school tweets were unearthed, when he got fired, the entire Guardians cast was like, we're going to go down with this guy. Like, we love this guy. Like, we don't want to do anything without him. Gina Carano didn't have that. That kind of speaks for itself. The other part about this whole thing is she's doing this whole poor me, I was so confused, I don't know how this happened to me thing, which is a strategy that works. It doesn't work as well when you are at the same time suing the company that you worked for and you're hanging out with Elon Musk and Ben Shapiro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. If your cast, if the Lucasfilm cast, if the Mandalorian family, if Jon Favreau and Filoni and Pedro Pascal were like, guys, Gina's great, and she was hanging with them, okay, maybe she's going to end up working through this and we're all going to be like, okay, you did some wrong stuff. But when you're hanging out with Ben Shapiro and Elon Musk and you're suing Disney and you're like, I'm so confused, poor me, you're like, no, this doesn't add up. This is what you are saying in this article and what you are doing in real life and the people you're associating with tell two completely different stories.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like her posts were anti-Semitic. You know, her posts were racist in ways. Her posts were election denying bullshit. Like, there was a lot of stuff here. And the fact that as soon as she got fired and she says this interview, as soon as that contract or whatever was terminated, she ran to Ben Shapiro, like literally said, got an RV and drove to the Daily Wire studios across country to be there. That tells you that this was orchestrated. This was planned. She absolutely knew what the fuck she was doing. I think she had already made her decision that she was going to fuck with Disney, get in with the right wing. They would support her because she had seen how all these other people have been canceled, quote unquote, canceled by the left. And then found new life on the right. Look, Roseanne Barr is now showing up all over the place on the right wing type of stuff. And so I think she thought, okay, I'll do this. And then Ben Shapiro is going to do this movie. And then I'll be a successful actress for right wing movies. The problem is even right wing people like to watch people who can actually act, who actually have talent, and they didn't support her shit. And now she's back here, hat in hand, kind of trying to massage the wheels of Hollywood so that they can look at her again for something. But I think, Shannon, you said it right. She wasn't that respected of an actress before this happened. She's even less of a respected actress now, because who wants to deal with damaged goods that can barely act? It doesn't make sense. And no one's going to go watch her films, you know?
Even putting aside, I mean, I don't think you're wrong, but even putting aside the quality of her acting, putting all of that aside, being like, well, you're a bad actress, so you don't deserve it. Like, even putting all of that aside.
I'm not saying don't deserve. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's why people don't want to work with her. So I'm not saying she doesn't deserve
it. Well, I don't know. There's a lot of people that are bad actors and people like working with them. Like, there are people working in this industry.
That's true.
And they are not great and they work. So it's not strictly speaking that. But I do agree with you that it's exactly what you're saying. I'm coming back hat in hand, saying, I'm sorry, I didn't get it, I was confused, I was misunderstood, while I am suing, and I'm hanging out with two people that are just, at this point, very well known and associated with all the things, that she says she didn't mean to say.
Right. And who are invested.
It's like I didn't mean this about the trans community. I didn't mean this about Black Lives Matter. I didn't mean this about all the things I tweeted. But by the way, both Elon Musk and Ben Shapiro, if you look at anything they say for more than 5 minutes, agree with all the things that people are mad at me that I tweeted.
Yeah, yeah. And also, Elon has an invested interest, rather, in taking down Disney. And because of Disney taking all the advertising down off of X and off of Twitter, which he said at that convention a few weeks ago. And so, like, in a way, and I do feel bad for Gina in this way, is I feel like she's being used by a number of places for their own purposes. And look, Gina comes from money. Her family has a lot of money. She's going to be fine. And don't worry about that. It's the other side of it that she's trying to reclaim her name, she says. So yeah, we'll see at the end. What I just think she needs to break off from everything and really kind of do her own thing, because it just looks like she's being a pawn in a game between two massive billionaires. And by that, I mean Elon Musk and Disney, using her in a way for their own purposes. And that's not where you want to be, for God's sakes. All right. And one last thing, let's get for the Disney stuff. Let's get into some Bad Batch real quick. We had episodes 6 and 7 from season 3 that dropped. Michael, I go to you. Your overall thoughts on these two episodes of Bad Batch as we saved Omega from Mount Tantus and had a confrontation at the end between Wolf and Rex there on the mountains, and they got away. So your thoughts on these overall two episodes?
You know, I was really excited at the beginning of the season. I felt like we kind of got off to a really good start, and the pacing was really kind of picking up. But it does feel to me a little bit that we're sort of settling into what I will just call the typical Bad Batch pace, which is every episode has a single reveal, something happens, but then there's just a lot, and it's beautiful. Like it's beautifully done. Very, very slow stuff, but it's still very slow stuff. Like for two episodes, like we get to the base with Rex and the clones. We find out that these other clones were being trained in Tantus, and that Crosshair was going to be one of them. They all come in. There's a big fight. They leave. The Bad Batch gets away.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, okay. Like it's like at this point, and also it's kind of like what I was saying earlier, in the same way that most of Ahsoka was, gosh, we got to figure out a way to get to this planet. How do we get to this planet? We got to get to this planet. And then you get to the end and you're like, okay, so next season, we're stuck on this planet. How are we going to get off this planet? We got to get back out of this planet. We got to go. You're like, okay, fine. And with Bad Batch, it's a little bit like, okay, we got to get off Mount Tantus. We got to get out of Mount Tantus. Let's get off of Mount Tantus. What do we, okay, we got to get back to Mount Tantus. How do we get back to Mount Tantus? I don't know how to get back to Mount Tantus. I'm like, all right, like, I guess, but, and it's also like, you don't ever want to be fully ahead. As a show, you don't want to be fully ahead of your audience. And watching them all go, what does M count mean? I don't know. Do you know what M count means? Like, I don't know. This is a mystery that we're going to have to solve. And we're like, every single person watching is like, we know what M count is. We know why they need it. We know what's going to happen. We've all seen Rise of Skywalker. We know what you're trying to do. This is not a mystery. So I still think it's beautiful. I'm watching until the end. I love the characters. But at this point, I'm getting a little, this ties into my Star Wars, what are we doing? Where are we going? Feelings this week.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And now I know why you didn't like the Titanic. We know the ship's going to sink. We know. I understand. I get it. Shannon, your thoughts on these two episodes from Bad Batch Season 3?
Accepting these two episodes for what they were, I actually quite enjoyed them. I feel like anytime you can put Rex back in with Clone Force 99, I feel like that's a good dynamic to have. The whole idea that some of the clones aren't prisoners, they're actually being trained. Crosshair was supposed to be one of them. You see that, you know, they're called like the Shadows or whatever. Crosshair dealing with his tremors, how he still has a little case of the yips. I mean, I thought, again, for these two episodes, I was very, very entertained. As Vogel lays out his litigious arguments, kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess. But for the, you know, for the 45 minutes that I spent watching this morning as I was having my breakfast waiting to record with you all, I was like, I thought these were pretty good episodes, if not not necessarily narratively progressive.
Yeah, I like these two episodes. I've been liking the season. This is the Bad Batch season that I've been wanting for three seasons now, and it finally showed up in season three, and I'm enjoying it. I'm invested in it. I like it. I don't mind being ahead, Michael. I understand your concerns about it. I don't mind being ahead because I care about these characters, and I don't actually know what's going to happen to them, some of them. So I'm like, okay, what is this all leading to? It's kind of like when you watch Rogue One, you're like, are they, for the first time, are they all going to die? What's going to happen? Who's going to live? Who's not going to live? That kind of thing. So I'm still kind of in that place of like, what's going to happen? So as they get the information that I already know, it deepens that concern about what the end result of all of this is going to be. And I like that we got this kind of new, interesting clone soldier that is unkillable, apparently. So what's that? How's that going to play out over the next few episodes? I like seeing Crosshair and the development of that some more. And I enjoyed the end there with Rex and Wolf, like kind of having this conversation about what he should do. And Rex convinces him to at least let them go and maybe question things. So from a military side, that I've kind of really been enjoying some of the military aspects of this season and some of the commentary they're making about being soldiers in an army and whether you should follow or not follow orders and question orders and look to see what more is going on. So I kind of love it from that angle as well when I'm watching it. So for me, I'm enjoying the season. And, you know, I totally respect your opinion, Michael, but I'm enjoying it very much.
Look, I'm glad you guys are enjoying it. I'm thrilled for you. But I will say one thing on the front, because I do agree with you. The Rex Wolf conversation at the end was great. And Shannon, I agree with you. Anytime I see Rex, I like it. But that's also part of my issue with Bad Batch. Mm. If we're all being really honest, who's more interesting, Rex or Hunter and Wrecker?
Rex.
Now, Crosshair's great. Don't get me wrong. Crosshair, out of all of them, is the best. Like, because everything you guys said, all the Crosshair stuff, Crosshair having the yips, Crosshair getting, like, Crosshair having been, like, on the Empire's side, realizing the Empire wasn't there for him, being disillusioned, coming back around, having to sort of like win back people's trust. That's all great. Crosshair, they did a great job with. Yeah. But this is the Bad Batch. It's not the Rex show. And the best moment, to John's point, is this wonderful confrontation between Rex and Wolf, two characters that we like for other non-Bad Batch reasons, having this conversation. And it's not Hunter having that conversation. It's not Wrecker having that conversation. It's not Omega having that conversation. It's Rex. And so that's another reason where you're like, okay, but like maybe we just sort of followed Rex and the guys and watched them kind of do what they're doing because that seems to be more interesting.
I won't deny that Hunter becomes the beta once Rex is around. He is definitely the alpha Rex. So, all right. Any final words on this? We've spent 40 minutes on Star Wars. We got to get to Marvel here. shall we take a break?
Let's take a break.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll jump into some Marvel news here on the other side. Thanks so much. We'll be back right after this. Hello, Geek Buddies fans. Before we jump into today's episode, let's give a warm thank you to our sponsor, Marquee TV. Their support is why we're able to bring this podcast to you. Marquee TV isn't just any streaming service. They're your gateway to an incredible world of arts and culture.
That's right, Johnny. I've explored Marquee TV, and I've been amazed by their vast library of performances, exclusive interviews, and behind-the-scenes content. It is a treasure trove for any arts and culture lover. Right now, I'm in the middle of watching the Royal Shakespeare Company's production of The Tempest, and I've also got my eye on that Shakespeare masterclass taught by Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah, Shannon, and speaking of the RSC, I watched Christopher Eccleston's performance of Macbeth last night, and I'm going to jump into Kit Harington's performance of Henry V from the Donmar Warehouse.
Imagine having the world's most breathtaking ballets, dramatic theater productions, and magical operas at your fingertips. That's the experience Marquee TV offers, making the arts accessible wherever you are.
And we've got a special treat for our listeners. Marquee TV offers 3 months of access for just 99 cents. That's right, 3 months for only 99 cents with the code BUDDIES, B-U-D-D-I-E-S. Simply visit marquee.tv and use the promo code BUDDIES to dive into the world of arts like never before. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV. Get 3 months for just 99 cents. Visit marquee.tv to start your journey into the world of arts now. Use code BUDDIES.
Explore the extensive library of performances on Marquee TV today and keep up with the latest in art streaming by following at Marquee TV on social media.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do, 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 do.
It's good. I like that. All right, let's move on to some Marvel news here. We got two things to get to that are going on in the world of Marvel. And, of course, the one of the big ones here that's been reported from a number of scoopers and sources, Daniel Richtman has reported there. And, look, a lot of times Daniel's right, sometimes he isn't. But he is claiming that part of Bob Iger's decision to kind of cut some things down and not take a lot of risks and go with some well-known properties or well-known quantities that they know they can count on. Disney is apparently going to cancel any anticipated Eternals, Ant-Man, and Captain Marvel sequels. Again, this is rumored to be what's happening here. Apparently Feige wanted to go forward with an Eternals thing, but I should put the graphic up for you guys. But Iger said no. So that's the situation there. That's the rumor. So there'll be no Ant-Man 4, no Captain Marvel 3, no Eternals 2. And they're focusing on these known quantities that they think are going to yield them better results. The fandom has exploded online. Everybody is caught up in their feels about this, specifically Eternals 2, and now people are like, well, you know, we got to take the risks. So why don't they take the risks with this and risk that? So, gentlemen, do you believe this report? I guess I'll go to you, Shannon, first. Do you believe this report? Do you think this is true? Does this make sense to you? And do you understand the people's anger?
I mean, I definitely believe the Eternals 2 thing that, you know, that movie ended with a lot of threads left hanging. And I think you don't do, I don't think you leave as many threads if you don't have some idea how they're going to be resolved. That doesn't mean that this is what the next one is going to be and this is what is going to happen. But you plan on returning to that story in some capacity. And that's not to say that they won't do it. They're just not going to do it in an Eternals 2. Kind of like with the Incredible Hulk. Point. Iron Man came out the gate, was a huge hit. Incredible Hulk didn't flop.
Yeah.
Incredible Hulk made money, but it just was not the runaway hit that they wanted and that they did get with Iron Man. So I think the same thing is kind of true with Eternals. I think them headlining another movie seemed like it was probably in doubt, but that doesn't mean that those characters, because there were a million of them, that doesn't mean those characters aren't going to appear in the MCU going forward. Some of their roles might be diminished and some of the storylines might not be fully addressed, but I don't think it's the last we've seen of the Eternals. But it doesn't surprise me that they took a swing with this and it didn't catch for the most part. Like Ant-Man 4 and Captain Marvel 3, I kind of doubt those were actually in development because there's so much other stuff that they have to get to first. Right. Ant-Man 4 never seemed like it was probably going to happen to me that, you know, again, these characters are in the universe. If Paul Rudd kind of passes the torch to his daughter, Cassie Lang and as Stature, I could see that happen. I can see those characters sticking around. Captain Marvel 3, after the reception of the Marvels, it was like, I doubt Brie Larson is going to be headlining another Marvel film. Again, I think all three of those characters will return in some capacity. And I think Captain Marvel as a brand, they could return to at some point.
Right.
It's just not going to be with Brie Larson.
But we are getting a Thor 5. Like, even after Love and Thunder crashed and burned, right? You can understand Ant-Man and Wasp, Quantumania. Okay, let's not do a fourth one. Okay, but then we're not going to do a Captain Marvel 3. Okay, I get that because of the Marvels and all of that. Eternals 2, I mean, as you said, multiple storylines here. There's a large celestial in the middle of the fucking ocean. So,
girl, don't get me started.
Michael, your thoughts when you hear this. Does this make sense? Do you think this is the smart way going forward? Or is this a bit like you said about Star Wars, where they're kind of all over the place and not sure what they want to do?
So I think both sides are right. And both sides are wrong. Like, really, really, whatever. Like, from a strict dollars and cents, Bob Iger trying to right the ship, what have we all been saying for the past year and a half, 2 years? Where's Marvel going? What's going on? Who are the Avengers? Where is this team? It's a bunch of characters running around, and I don't know who I'm supposed to be rooting for. There's not, who's our core team?
Right.
So, Bob Iger going, guys, let's focus. Let's not make all these movies. Who's the core team?
Right.
We all know everyone loves Chris Hemsworth as Thor. Thor 4 notwithstanding, we all love Chris Hemsworth as Thor. There's not a single person that doesn't scream when they watch Infinity War and Thor rainbow bridges into Wakanda and says, bring me Thanos, and we all lose our shit. Like, Thor is guaranteed we're all going to get excited, even though we didn't love Thor 4.
Yeah.
So Bob Iger trying to correct everything and say, let's not do a bunch of stuff, let's focus, 100% the right move.
Yeah.
Agreeing with you guys, less about whether the movies did well or not, and more, I think, and this is where I think Bob Iger is wrong about Eternals. And it's not because I like Eternals most out of the three of us, even though I do. But the rumor is that Kevin Feige really wants Eternals 2.
Yeah.
And the reason he does is you have to think of it from a bigger Marvel universe storytelling standpoint.
Okay.
And think about where every character is by the end. So, you know, Scott and Cassie and everybody, Janet, like, they all got out of the quantum realm.
Right.
They're in the world. They met a Kang. Scott's a little bit worried about what that might mean. You could leave them alone until you get to Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars and pick up where you left them, and they're fine. There's no threads that need to be figured out. Like, that's a closed off story. Captain Marvel and Ms. Marvel are chilling out. Ms. Marvel's putting together the Young Avengers, and Monica Rambeau is stuck in another universe with the X-Men. Mm-hmm. You can leave them there until you get to Kang Dynasty and pick up those threads. Like, if you opened up Kang Dynasty and Captain Marvel was living on the farm and all of a sudden some shit went down and a portal opened and Monica Rambeau came out with fucking Beast and Wolverine and said, we need to talk, we'd be fine. We'd be like, good, I'm caught up. Eternals is a fucking mess in the Marvel Universe if you don't pick up those threads. We all know that giant fucking celestial in the ocean is going to get picked up in, if not Thunderbolts, Captain America 4. They are going to deal with the celestial in the ocean. We've all heard the rumors. We've all heard the rumors of how it's going to be tied in. So that's going to get picked up there. But you have these superpowered alien beings that have been living on Earth since the beginning of time. We had a giant celestial show up and abduct one of them. And Harry Styles is running around as Thanos' brother. And Kit Harington has the black sword and maybe Blade was there. Like, that is so much that you can't then get to the beginning of Kang Dynasty and be like, by the way, here's the Eternals. Here's what happened to Cersei. Here's who Eros is. And this is why he's important. And also, here's Kit Harington. And he's got the black sword. And it's really important. And then, oh, also, like, you just can't do it. So it makes sense that Kevin Feige is like, look, I need to do Eternals too. Like, we need to do it just to... Even if we did it to sort of wrap up a bow on this, like, I want to tell that story. Bob Iger's like, Eternals didn't do the box office that we thought it was going to do. And also, Marvel fans are super split on it, and nobody is super engaged with those characters. Audiences outside of super nerds don't really care about them at all. Why don't we focus on the stuff? So Bob Iger's right from a dollars and cents point, but from a bigger, this is how Marvel and the universe works, Kevin Feige has a storytelling mess if he doesn't do a second Eternals movie.
Yeah, I mean, I take your points, obviously, both of you. And I think I'm more with Iger. Like, I don't think the general public will give a shit. I really don't. I think the nerds who monitor, and like me, like us, the Geek Buddies nerds, who monitor the storylines and put all, like, they're going to care. But the general public clearly didn't give a fuck about that movie, didn't go see it at the numbers that they should. And so I don't think they're going to care if you cancel all this, the Eternal stuff and then weave it in somehow in these other subsequent installments, other subsequent films. They'll find a way around it, whatever. Most of the general public doesn't care because they didn't see the movie. So they're not invested right in the storylines because they didn't see the movie. So if they didn't see the movie, they don't have that, well, how does this make sense? How does that make sense? You know, it's only the people who've actually seen the movie and pay super attention, close attention to the Marvel storylines that are going to care about it in the end. So I understand where Iger is coming from, and I think they should not do an Eternals 2, should not do... I think the Ant-Man thing is unfairly vilified. Again, I think the three of us, we liked Quantumania. We're not going to trumpet it from the mountains, but certainly we thought it was a fine film. It wasn't great, but fine.
I mean... And I think it's less offensive than Multiverse of Madness. It's less offensive than Multiverse of Madness.
Fair point. Let's say that. So, I mean, I think it deserves another shot because those first two installments were good films. I liked Ant-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp. I thought those were good films. So one bad film shouldn't kill it. With Captain Marvel, I can understand because the first film was so universally not liked. It did make $1 billion, but a lot of people claim it was because of where it was placed. The Marvels didn't do well. And yes, I know there are a lot of Marvels truthers out there that think it was some vast conspiracy where everyone was involved to kill the movie instead of accepting that the movie was just not good. And I get it. You have a right to defend your film. You know, you could also not tell everyone, like, I'll never forgive you for not liking the movie. Come on, calm down. And don't give me this stuff with Disney Plus viewing numbers. A lot of people stop for accidents. It doesn't mean you want to see one. So these are the things that these are the situation I look at when you look at this kind of stuff. God. So at the end of the day, though, I think Disney's making these cuts for what they think is best. But I think playing it safe is how things blow up in your face, especially when things like this. So I may understand what Iger is doing, but I do think it's the wrong move. The things we enjoy about Marvel is they took risks. From Iron Man forward, they took risks in bringing these things about. Guardians of the Galaxy, I bet you every single person would have told you, don't fucking do this. No one knows these characters. People barely know these actors. Don't do this. But it worked out. And so you've got to take the risks. Well, if they go back to playing it safe, I think it's eventually going to blow up in their face. Because it won't be inspiring. It won't be exciting like it was in the past.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. But the question would be, Well, you said two different things. Like, you were like, I don't think they should do an Eternals 2.
I don't.
I get not doing a Captain Marvel 3.
Yeah.
You would give Scott Lang another shot at bat. I don't think an Ant-Man 4 is a risk.
No, I don't either.
So you say, I don't necessarily agree with Iger, but you do. But what are the risks you... Let me put it this way. What risks do you think Marvel should be taking?
Explore, like, what they did with Werewolf, right? The Werewolf by Night or whatever it was. Like, those are the things. Go and explore these characters or go and find these properties that haven't been done but could be rich for storytelling material, like they've done. That's been their kind of bread and butter as they've gone along with this thing that I've really enjoyed. And so, to me... playing it safe is Ant-Man 4. I think that's actually playing it safe. I don't think that's a risk at all. So if you want to go take risks, there are characters, there are other stories to tell here that you can mess around with and have fun taking risks with. And you could argue, well, they took risks with bringing in these directors, bringing in these younger writers. It didn't really work out. So find that happy medium of taking risks where you don't stack the odds against you quite as high. Like, you know what I'm saying? There's someplace in the middle there between playing it safe and taking risks. So wherever the middle is, I would say that's where Marvel needs to be. And that's where they've always kind of flourished when they've got it right, you know?
So here's where I think, again, where I think there's probably like the middle ground is what's real. Like, you know, we read like Bob Iger's talking to his investors and says, we're not going to take as many risks. We're going to stick to things we know people like, which is exactly what you should tell your investors. And then the rumors are true, I get why Kevin Feige wants to do an Eternals 2. I do take your point. I don't think audiences that are outside the geek sphere are going to necessarily miss the Eternals if there's other ways to wrap that story. So that's fair enough. So if those are the movies that Bob Iger is saying we're not moving forward, then we're all a little bit in agreement. Mm-hmm. I also agree with you that Marvel should absolutely take risks. But given where they are, and back when Marvel made Guardians of the Galaxy, they had earned the right to take that risk.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah.
They had been killing it. Avengers, the movies have gotten so big that we forget that taking the Hulk, Captain America, Thor, and Iron Man, and putting the four of them in one movie at that time, nobody, like, you're like, is this even going to work? And because of that, they earned the right. Marvel, where they're at right now, you've sort of lost the right to take the big swings in this moment. Now, if I were Kevin Feige, I would go into Bob Iger and I'd be like, look, I hear you. I get that we're not going to take huge swings in the box office, but I do think that part of what makes Marvel work is that we do take risks.
Yeah.
So we're all in agreement that these are the movies that we're going to do for now, leading up to Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars. On Disney Plus, can we do Werewolf by Night's a perfect example. Let's do a one-shot. Let's do Marvel one-shots where we just try and do something super unique and bring some new characters in, and we can see which one of those pop. Mm. We can see who get really excited, and then we can graduate. Like, there's ways that you can still take risks in a safer, more studio-friendly way until you've earned the right again and you kind of get back, you right the ship, and maybe after Secret Wars and we're all like, fuck, they did it, then they can go and do big risks. You know, it's like, I think there's ways that you can do both.
Yeah, fair point. Michael, Shannon, any final words on this before we move on to the next topic?
Real quick. I was just going to say that taking a risk is basically a new character. And they will not be able to just use their current catalog of characters over and over and over again. I mean, once they finish Phase 6, I mean, granted, you have Fantastic Four coming, you have X-Men coming. You could probably just rely on X-Men, but they will introduce more characters. And each one of those characters, if it's unproven, if the general public doesn't really know it, I mean, yeah, it's a risk. I mean, you could potentially say, I mean, was Black Panther a risk? I mean, you saw the reception you got in Civil War, so maybe not. But this was a new character. Captain Marvel, this is our first female-led superhero. Mm. You know, technically that was a risk. It paid off. The movie was, and you know, that... I think that kind of resulted in what you saw, what the sequel did, which was also a movie.
Yeah.
But they are going to continue taking risks. Like with Eternals, I mean, outside of the Celestial and the Ocean, I mean, you know, three of them are with that other Celestial. It was Kingo, Cersei, and Phastos. If we never see them again, we never see them again. Right. The other three are in space with Harry Styles. We never see them again. Is that the way to wrap something up nicely? Not really. But at this point, it's like I could see them being like, eh, okay, you know what? They're gone. We just don't ever see them again.
Right, right. Yeah, I could see that happening as well. All right, let's move on to this other section of the show here. Bo DiMaio. We got to talk about this one. Bo DiMaio was in the midst of a particularly crazy busy time here as the premiere of X-Men 97 happened just a couple days ago. But a couple days before the premiere of X-Men 97, Bo DiMaio was summarily dismissed from Marvel and dismissed from doing any of the press for this show, even walking the press line or walking the red carpet, which is a real, real rarity. He wrote seasons one and two, but after he was fired or let go, his email was deactivated, his company email was deactivated, the cast and crew were informed, and then DiMaio's Instagram account, once a source of X-Men updates, was deleted. Now, for those of you who don't know, Bo DiMaio is a gay black man, had an OnlyFans account where he was doing stuff and posting stuff as well. A lot of people felt that this was the reason he got fired, but Michael, I mean, this is you don't do this. So even screenwriters, who have been replaced or have had their stuff written over again, get to walk the red carpet, get to go to the premiere. This is a massive decision by Marvel, which, because they haven't said anything, people are running rampant with the speculation that this was a homophobic firing, a racist firing. Other people speculating that something bigger, like the Jonathan Major stuff, went on behind the scenes. What can you say? What do you know? What are your feelings about this, brother?
Well, I mean, it's one of, like, this happened. I mean, when this happens, it's happened. Like, when I was at Hasbro, it happened with an executive where, like, one, like, we literally came into the office one day, an office was cleaned out, email was shut down, and nobody talked. And HR was like,
wow,
this person is no longer here. We can't discuss it. And it was the same thing internally. You run around and you're like, what the fuck happened? I don't know. and it's like, that's what this sounds like. I mean, like, yeah, he was just gone at the worst possible time for them to have him be gone.
Yeah.
He was gone and everyone was just told nothing.
Yeah.
From what we know, like from what we have heard.
Right.
And so it sounds like it was bad. Mm-hmm. Whatever it was bad. Now, as far as all the rumors, I mean, I've heard a lot of the rumors. I've been emailing people. I have friends who are friends with Bo DiMaio, who knew him before he was working at Marvel, who, like, say he's a great guy. But, you know, breaking it all down, there, it seems to be a few buckets. Like, there is the bucket of he had a lot to say about the writing room on The Witcher.
Yes.
And some of the writers on The Witcher had a lot of things to say about him.
Yeah.
And it seems like that was not the most friendly. It was a contentious environment. The OnlyFans thing, I don't think is what it is, because A, it was a non-explicit OnlyFans account.
Right,
he didn't
right.
post anything explicit there. And he's openly had that for a long time. There are interviews right. dating back to last year where he was openly talking about his OnlyFans account and what went on. So it's like, it's not like that was an earth-shattering piece of news that came out this past week. Right. Like, that's been known. He has been very openly gay. He has been very openly posting sexy pictures of himself on Twitter and Instagram. He's very openly proud of being a gay black man. So those are all things. I've heard rumors of things that he's said that are derogatory about other writers. I've heard rumors about things that he said that are derogatory about other people in the LGBTQ community. Mm. But again, none of those seem to rise to the level. So it's all just hearsay and rumors. Whatever it was, I don't know. We're going to find out. But I guess what I'm saying is, all the rumors that I've heard thus far, as much as, like, this sounds juicy or that sounds juicy, it's all stuff that's been around.
Yeah.
Like, none of this is new information. It's stuff that Marvel would have known about and has been covering. The only thing that's X-Men specific, it seems, is that he did get into a lot of arguments online about the casting of Sunspot.
Mm-hmm.
That he cast, I believe, a lighter-skinned Brazilian actor as Sunspot and not sort of an Afro-Brazilian person. And a lot of people got mad at him about that, and there was a lot of contention. But again, that was a while ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, without knowing any specifics, this does fall into that category, just based on some of the rumors of him with other writers, of, like, what we were talking about with Gina Carano.
Mm.
It's that thing of, if you're a really great person and people behind the scenes really like you and something comes up or something happens, there's usually going to be people that got your back.
Yeah.
And right now, both the silence of a lot of people combined with a lot of people coming out saying, well, he said this on The Witcher, he did this. Like, it just seems like there's not a lot of people who have his back, and that is telling.
Mm. Okay. Shannon, your analysis of this situation, your reaction, then your analysis of what you think might have happened here.
I mean, it's pretty unprecedented. And again, like having seen him at Comic-Con at the Marvel Animation panel, I mean, this was a guy who ostensibly loved these characters and loved this show. And it was a really kind of a formative experience for him as a young comics fan. So listening to him talk, like it was awesome. Cause you know, you love to hear people talk about what they love to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this seems like such a great marriage of, you know, this is someone who's a true fan, wants to continue the story, and who's also, you know, got chops and, you know, good writer. It seems like Marvel, whatever happened, like something happened. Yeah. It seems that they are going to be, in the wake of the Jonathan Majors thing, they're going to be pretty quick to cut ties with anything they view as problematic.
Yeah.
So again, I think the stuff that Vogel mentioned, how it was already kind of out there, that maybe that was just like a snowball that just kept forming as it was rolling down the hill, or maybe there was something that happened that was just too big to ignore. And they're like, all right, no more.
Yeah.
But my guess is that, yeah, we probably will never find out what the actual story is. My guess is he probably had to sign an NDA conclude his time at Marvel. But yeah, I mean, everyone that talks about the show who went to that premiere said, it's, if you're a fan of, you know, the 90s X-Men series, that you're going to be really happy. So, you know, to cut someone loose who did a good job, like, again, something had to have happened.
Yeah, I think that's where it is.
I really do hope that it doesn't get like, and I don't think it will, because I think, again, in the world of, in the Twitter sphere, everyone is like, oh, Bo DiMaio, what happened? What happened? What happened? Outside of the Twitter sphere, people are like, oh, there's a new X-Men show. Cool. So I think that, I hope that this doesn't hurt the reception of the show next week, because like Shannon said, everything I'm hearing from people who went to the premiere are like, it's awesome. The clip that was released this week showing them fighting the Sentinels, like, it looks
awesome.
Great. It looks super fun. So I'm still really excited for the show. And it does seem like, again, to Shannon's point, and I think Brad Wunderbaum came out like this morning, maybe. And his statement was that, like, Bo DiMaio did a great job on seasons 1 and 2.
Yep.
We're really excited about it. So like, I am excited about the show to see where it goes. And I'm curious. I mean, I do think that I would put my money on someone has a temper and is argumentative as the most likely culprit somewhere in there. But we might never know.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has to be something big, especially on the in the heels of the Jonathan Majors stuff. And I get some people who are saying, look, why are they canceling these movies that had diverse leads? And now they go after a black gay creator. What is Marvel doing? And I think people need to calm down and look at these situations specifically. And you all know I'm the first one to grab the drum and think it's, you know, racism or whatever. So
what?
If I'm telling you to calm down, I think you guys need to calm down and reassess these situations individually, wait for more information to come out, and also be realistic about this situation. How many companies are going to throw good money after bad? You got to look at these situations. And then with Bo DiMaio, you got to wait and see what comes out on it and be a little more open-minded. We got to wrap up here in 5 minutes. So real quick, there is speculation out there with the Marvel stuff. Henry Cavill and Ryan Gosling have both supposedly, that's the rumor, accepted roles in the MCU. Shannon, I go to you first. Who would you like to see Cavill playing? Who would you like to see Gosling playing? The rumors are Nova and Doctor Doom for Gosling and Wolverine and Doctor Doom for Cavill, or what do you think?
Gosling's awesome. Nova seems like it would be a good fit. I don't see a Doctor Doom from Gosling. Also, Gosling has said in the past he wants to play Johnny Blaze. And I could definitely see Gosling as more of a Ghost Rider type role character. Cavill, it really depends on who's directing him. Like, I think if Guy Ritchie is directing Henry Cavill, he will turn in a great performance. I think even though The Man from U.N.C.L.E. did not do well, Henry Cavill in that film is fantastic.
Agreed.
With the wrong director, Cavill can be very wooden and very boring. in my opinion. So I don't know if Matt Shackman is the guy to make him an interesting Doom. And again, I just don't see him. I just don't see him as a Doom. I mean, they talked about Captain Britain for years, and Wolverine. No. Watching, and again, I didn't watch a ton of The Witcher, so maybe he grew in the role, but him trying to be trying to menacing just came off a little silly to me, despite the fact that the dude is shredded and can probably snap me in half. I just don't, he's just not Logan to me. So, but Gosling, I would love to see in the MCU in some capacity.
All right, Mike, your quick thoughts.
I'm just thinking about Tom Cruise as Iron Man in Multiverse of Madness, and I feel like we're back where we started. Like, I don't, like, all these rumors flying, and I'm like, how much of these are real rumors, and how much of this is somebody on Twitter said something, and it's just gone like a, it's gone like wildfire. Like, and I think part of it is because I'm kind of with Shannon, like, given the names that are out there, like, look, I love Ryan Gosling. I think he can do anything as far as I'm concerned. And Henry Cavill, I think, is kind of boring. But I get that he's big and fans love him and whatever. But both of them just don't quite seem like the fit.
Okay.
You just, given the way, I mean, like, Pedro Pascal getting cast as Reed Richards, I mean, he's a big name and he's a very, very popular name. But even he sort of has that, melts into the role that he plays. Whereas Henry Cavill and Ryan Gosling are just so big.
Yeah.
And Marvel tends to cast like a little bit below that so that someone can come in and really embody that role, it feels like. And it really strikes me as the Tom Cruise is showing up as Iron Man, as Tony Stark. You guys wait and see. I can't wait to see it. And then everybody went to see Multiverse of Madness. Was like, I liked it, but where was Tom Cruise? I thought he was going to be in the movie. I'm like, yeah, okay, we'll see. I'll believe
Would you say Pedro Pascal has an elasticity to his performance?
Here's what I'll say. I want Cavill as Doom. I don't want Gosling in the MCU. I would love Gosling as Booster Gold. That to me is just, that is just fucking perfect casting. Do a Booster Gold movie. Have Ryan Gosling lead it. If you want to really fulfill my fantasies, bring back Russell Crowe as an old Ted Kord with Gosling's young Booster Gold. And you may not get the Nice Guys remake, but you get that chemistry in DC. And since you're going to stay with the Blue Beetle you have now, an old Russell Crowe Ted Kord who's been out in the fucking jungles, I think that would be awesome. So I just put it out there.
That's a grumpy Ted Kord.
Ted Kord.
By the way, I would watch the shit out of that movie. I'm not going
to lie. I mean, Susan Sarandon is age specific to be his sister. That works.
I'm mostly sold on Ryan Gosling as Booster Gold. I do agree with you that out of everything in the world, the idea of Ryan Gosling as Dr. Doom is like an interesting choice. I don't think it's the right one. The idea of Ryan Gosling as Nova, it's like, I could see it. The idea of Ryan Gosling as Booster Gold over in the DC universe is just a home run.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Well, there you go. That's our Geek Buddies episode for today. Thank you all so much for joining us. Sorry we went a little bit over an hour, but we hope we entertained you throughout the whole hour and 10 minutes so far of this particular episode. We appreciate you all hanging out with us. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MKToon. If you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays.
Mikey?
After you do all that following, you can also hit that like button below. Subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page. Check out all the amazing content he has got there. Leave your comments below. A lot of Star Wars talk, a lot of Marvel talk, a lot of opinions flying around. We know you got them. Let us know below in the chat or in the comments. If you're listening to us on a podcast, go ahead and leave us some stars and some comments so we go up in the rankings. And as always, the best thing you can do is retweet this video, post it on your social, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
Star Wars, Marvel, lot happening. My icy Oppenheimer. All right, thank you all so much. We love you madly. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode here of the
Geek Buddies.
Yeah! Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.